everyone, and welcome. I'm Erin Souza-Resendiz, Communications Manager here at the Barbara Lee Family Foundation. Thanks for joining our call. I want to share with you a few logistical tips for ensuring you can participate in the call and webinar, and then I'm happy to turn the call over to our leader, Barbara Lee. For those of you logged into the webinar, be sure to turn up the volume on your speakers or computer. And during the presenter's portion of the call, the lines will be muted, and then we will open it up for questions after that. If you're having any technical difficulties at all logging into the webinar, you can contact Dorothy Scheline in our office via email at info@blff.org, or you can give our office a call at 617-234-0351. And if you have logged into the webinar and the size of the slide seems to be slightly off, the scale button, the right-hand corner of your screen, if you click that, it should scale the size to the size of your monitor. And during the call, I hope you'll join the conversation online using the hashtag PitchPerfectPolitics. We'll be chatting via Twitter and Facebook as well. So after the presentations, we'll be sure to open the line for questions. And to ask a question, simply dial star 1. And I'd like to turn over to our leader of the Barbara Lee Family Foundation, Barbara Lee.
Great. Thanks so much, Erin. And thank you all for joining us on the call this afternoon. My name, as Erin said, is Barbara Lee, and I'm so pleased to welcome you all to this briefing. Before I introduce our special guest, I want to give a bit of context to help frame our discussion. As many of you know, for almost 15 years, the Barbara Lee Family Foundation has worked to advance women's equality in American politics through targeted nonpartisan research and strategic partnerships. Our work is guided by our core belief that electing women strengthens our democracy. This fall, my foundation partnered with Celinda Lake and her firm, Lake Research Partners, to conduct focus groups, followed by a phone survey and an online dial survey. And the result of this research is our report, Pitch Perfect, Winning Strategies for Women Candidates. It provides a clear roadmap to help women perfect their pitches and show voters they are qualified. Now, we all know there's no silver bullet solution that makes voters think a woman candidate is qualified. However, we found a few important strategies that work really well. Number one, use the qualified label. Whether you are describing yourself or describing the candidate that you're working with, talk about the word qualified. Use it, and also, if possible, use words like assertive, knowledgeable, confident, leader, and long-term elected official. Number two, maintain a confident presentation style. The most important factor is for women to introduce themselves in a confident manner and to maintain that confidence throughout. Women must avoid making mistakes early in their campaign, and they always need to be prepared to answer tough questions. Number three, incorporate action-oriented phrases like, I stand up, I deliver results, or I don't back down, or won't back down. Appearing proactive appeals to voters in a way that bolsters their perception of a woman's candidate's qualifications. And number four, tap into third-party validation. Voters respond well to phrases like, the business community praised her for her experience, or she's been endorsed by labor leaders. If a woman makes a mistake, make sure that a third-party validator immediately reaffirms her qualifications. Our special guests on the call today will highlight practical ways women candidates can perfect their pitches and convey their qualifications to voters. Since our time is short, I'm going to make brief introductions now and then turn the call over to our team of presenters. Our first guest is Kate Gormley, a senior analyst with Lake Research Partners. Kate conducts qualitative and quantitative research for foundations, nonprofits, and issue advocacy organizations. She's analyzed a wide range of issues, including women's leadership, healthcare, education, reproductive health and justice, the environment, and poverty. Chris Yonke is a long-term colleague of mine, and in fact, she encouraged me to create our very first Governor's Guidebook back in 1998. Everyone will want to read her new book, Well-Spoken Woman, which draws upon her 20 years of experience helping people from all walks of life stand and deliver for audiences large and small. As a Washington, D.C.-based speech coach, Chris has prepped First Lady Michelle Obama for her speech at the International Olympic Committee and Al Franken for his U.S. Senate debates. Every 4 years since 1996, Chris is backstage at the Democratic National Convention helping party leaders, celebrities, dignitaries, and ordinary people look good in their nationally televised speeches. Deb Sofield, is president of her own executive speech and presentations coaching company based in South Carolina. She trains women and men in the U.S. and abroad public speaking, presentation skills, and message development. I've seen Deb in action, captivating women at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government, and she's also taught public speaking at the Women's Campaign School at Yale, where she is past president, Loyola University, and the University of South Carolina, just to name a few. And our last presenter is Mark Putnam, the founder of Putnam Partners. He has been a national political media consultant and campaign strategist for over two decades. He has created national television advertising for four presidential campaigns and served as a chief speechwriter for a fifth. In total, he's been a lead consultant on campaigns in 47 states. Mark has created some of the most talked about political advertising campaigns of the last decade, including the award-winning advertising for newly elected U.S. Senator Heidi Heitkamp from North Dakota, which you will see today. I am very excited to welcome all of our guests and offer a special welcome to the elected officials from both sides of the aisle who join us today. So thank you all so much, and take it away.
Thank you, Barbara. This is Kate. This research that we did with the Barbara Lee Family Foundation builds on over a decade of work. And really more than anyone else, the foundation has looked at how to unlock the doors to executive leadership, and it's been a great partnership. As we talk to voters in focus groups and poll voters to get their opinion on voting for women candidates, we keep running into this notion that people would vote for a qualified woman. But we never hear anyone say, I'd vote for a qualified man. We found that this notion of a qualified woman is code for something, and it's textured and nuanced and quite important to voters. As Barbara mentioned, to dig into this concept, last year we conducted focus groups, then a phone survey, and then an online dial survey. And we found that the pitch really matters when it comes to voters believing that a woman candidate is qualified. For a little context, we found that voters believe that it's harder for a woman candidate to appear qualified than a male candidate. 82% of women voters and 76% of men voters say it's harder for a woman to appear qualified. For women voters, this is embedded in a broader phenomenon in our society. It's just part of the reality of what happens today. Women have to be better than men, and they have to show an extra quotient of being qualified, especially when they're aspiring in a male-dominated field like politics. Women candidates also need to use the label of qualified more. 90% of voters said it's important that a woman candidate include in her description that she is qualified. It's also very important for women candidates to convey confidence. In the focus groups, voters express doubts about women who don't appear confident initially. On-the-job learning during a campaign or the perception that a woman is learning on the job as she's campaigning erodes the sense that the woman is qualified to run. When voters consider how women present themselves, it's most important that a woman be prepared, that she speaks intelligently, that she answers tough questions, that she speaks with authority, and that she projects confidence. 99 to 95% of voters said that each of these actions is important for a woman to show that she's qualified. In the dial survey that we did, we saw that action-oriented descriptions of women increase voters' perception that that woman candidate is qualified. Voters also remembered these kinds of take charge actions and cited them after the fact as something specific that stood out to them. A few examples of these kinds of phrases include how a woman candidate refused to back down, or a description of a woman candidate standing up in her debate. And we also saw in our phone survey that good performance in a debate is really important to conveying to voters that a woman candidate is qualified. Another trend we notice in the dial testing is third-party validators increase voters' perceptions that women candidates are qualified. So examples, we had a lot of different examples in the different language that we tested, but the examples of the validation range from the business community praising a candidate. We also had a section where a voter expressed admiration, and another example where a woman was being praised for commanding respect. And each of these made voters think that the woman was more qualified. So I'll conclude this overview of the data and turn the call over to the other presenters who have some real-world strategies on how to effectively portray confidence, use action-oriented language, and use validators.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. We are working on the technical side of this. I have a slide presentation that I want to share with everyone. My name is Chris Yonke, and as Barbara said, I'm a speech coach based in Washington, D.C. You've just heard Barbara and Kate lay out the latest research from the Barbara Lee Foundation, and they talked about what it is that voters are looking at and what it is that they're looking for when it comes to your candidacy. What I want to do now is give you some specifics, if you will, in terms of how to practice and how to prepare for the different forums that you will be in as a presenter. And as we go along, I just wanted to ask if I'm going to be able to move the slide so I can show people my pictures. Can someone give me a sense of that, please?
And Wendy is our operator, so I don't know if Wendy can hear us right now and help facilitate that happening.
What's going on?
Hi, Wendy. Chris, if you press the control button at the top of your screen, you'll be able to take control of the call.
All right. Fabulous. There we go. Terrific. Thank you so much for that help.
You're welcome. All right.
Here we go. Okay. So what I want to do, as I just said, Barbara and Kate laid out what are some of the expectations that voters have for you as candidates. And I want to talk more specifically about how you can practice and prepare. And also, if you're not doing this already, so that you can do your own skill assessment, so that you can improve your skills. As you all know, 2012 was a record year. We elected record numbers to women in Congress, and that was very, very exciting. But it was also a year where there were some off-key moments. And I want to start my presentation by talking about the things that can go wrong, whether you're in a debate or speaking before a live audience. And I've got the three, if you will, worst off-key moments from the 2012 election cycle. You probably all saw this debate that Texas Governor Rick Perry took part in on CNBC television. As you will recall, he was talking about the first thing that he would do if he was elected president when he went to Washington. He was going to eliminate three cabinet positions. He was going to get rid of education and commerce and something else which he couldn't remember. He took three shots at it, and Ron Paul, the libertarian, tried to help him out and suggested maybe he should eliminate five cabinet positions, but Rick Perry simply couldn't recall a fundamental principle of his campaign. So he wasn't searching for some obscure legislative issue or some complex policy point, but he simply couldn't remember something that he said was very, very important to him. The first presidential debate. Remember how it started? The question from moderator Jim Lehrer about the economy and jobs, the issue in the presidential election. And as I was sitting at home, probably like many of you, on the couch watching television, and I just remember feeling a very stinking feeling in my gut when President Obama started to respond. He had a half-hearted joke about his wedding anniversary, and then he launched into this rote response about the economy. His eyes were cast down. He seemed to be lacking energy, almost sleepwalking through his answer. And then by contrast, Governor Romney was on, head up, eyes alert, looking into the camera. He had a nice little use of humor at the beginning, and he hit the ground running. So that contrast did not serve well. And President Obama never recovered, never able to connect with the folks at home. And then our third gaffe, of course, took place at the Republican National Convention. Someone agreed to let Clint Eastwood have 3 minutes of primetime television time with no script. As Barbara mentioned, I do speech coaching at the Democratic Convention, and nobody goes on stage without a script. Now, that doesn't mean they stick to the script, and President Bill Clinton was able to ad-lib successfully for 24 minutes. Most people can't get away with that. But the idea that Clint Eastwood had no script and at the last minute requests a chair, which somebody gave to him, and it was just a complete disaster. So as you think through and recall these three off-key moments, I want you to ask yourself, you know, what is the common thread? What went wrong in all three of these scenarios? And obviously, it was a lack of preparation or simply bad preparation. So how to avoid these types of scenarios yourself? As Barbara and Kate said, when the voters are watching you, when they're listening to you, they're doing this assessment, and they want you to be qualified. They want you to come across as someone who is knowledgeable. And then women have this extra burden of needing to be likable. So how can you do this? How can you project these qualities? Well, you have to know how you come across. You need to have a sense of how audiences are judging you and, you know, what are they basing their conclusions on. And so a fundamental tenet of communications, whenever you are up in front of any audience, you have the ability to connect with your listeners on a couple of different levels. The vocal, how you sound, the visual, how you look, and the verbal, the content, what it is that you have to say. Now let's start with the visual. We know what a strong leadership style looks like. And if you have questions about any of this, I'm really happy to take them when we move into the Q&A period. But as you look at Condoleezza Rice speaking at the Republican National Convention, Hillary chairing a meeting at a NATO conference, and then Elizabeth Warren on stage for one of her debates in the U.S. Senate race in Massachusetts, there is a look from, you know, their wardrobe to the hair to the makeup. And it's very professional, it's very simple, and it's very geared towards television. So to know that audiences are judging you, as much as we dislike it, simply by your appearance. Now, these are more formal situations that you may find yourself in. As a candidate, of course, you have to do all kinds of things out on the campaign trail. So as you think about how you present yourself visually, be creative. And here are two examples of what I mean by that. You will recognize Heidi Heitkamp standing out in the midst of a beautiful prairie in North Dakota. To me, that sends the message of how connected she is. We're not with the land of North Dakota and the people of that land. And then Tammy Duckworth, you know, an Iraqi war veteran who lost her legs in a helicopter accident. This picture of her on this modified bicycle says so much about her. She is someone who is ready to go and ready to compete on every level. So in terms of the visual appearance, you know, think about the settings that you'll find yourself in. And, of course, in this day and age, you know, you'll be photographed and maybe videotaped out at a parade or, you know, at the farmer's market. So wardrobe is a big part of that, as well as your ability to use proactive, positive body language. Now, why am I focusing on the visual? Why did I start there? Of those three V's that I mentioned, the voice, the visual, and your content, the visual has the strongest impact on your audience. In terms of your first impression, 55% of the information that you communicate to voters comes from how you look and what you're doing with your body language. Number two on this list is the voice, and I want to talk about that next. 38% of the impression that you create is drawn from the quality of your sound, and that leaves 7% for the verbal. Now, this is not the excuse not to write your stump speech. That's not what I'm getting at all. But for you to understand that the visual and the vocal can be just as important as what it is that you're saying, and again, I would refer you back to the presidential debate. candidate Obama didn't appear comfortable, didn't appear as if he wanted to be on that stage that night, whereas Governor Romney was ready to go. Now, as far as the voice, women are at a little bit of a slight disadvantage here. Nothing that we can do anything about. Our vocal cords are shorter in length, and that's why some women tend to have a slightly higher pitched or breathier quality to their voice. So the first step here is, do you know how you sound? Do you have a low resonant tone like Rachel Maddow of cable television? And you probably recognize Terry Gross, who has this wonderful voice on National Public Radio. She is the moderator of the Fresh Air program. Or on the other hand, could your voice etch glass? So if you have no idea, it's time to record yourself. Yeah, do some practice out loud, play it back, and get a sense of the tone of your voice. And then the third piece of this is the content, and that's the verbal. I'm not going to say much about this because Deb is going to talk in greater detail about action words and build on some of the points that Kate and Barbara laid out. But I do want to refer you to something that I think you'll find pretty interesting. This past Sunday, January 11th, in the Outlook section, the editorial section of the Washington Post, the pollster Frank Luntz had a piece which he entitled Why Republicans Should Watch Their Language. And he talks about how talk is cheap, but that bad language is much more costly. And Frank Rich talks about, in terms of connecting with voters, they will not give you a chance to solve their problems if they think you don't understand them, especially at a time when Americans feel like no one is fighting for them. And the example that Luntz cites in his article of some polling that he did amongst 2012 voters, the question he posed was, who do you think cares about people like you? President Obama crushed Mitt Romney on this, 81% to 18%. So that's what I mean when I say speak their language. And this is where sometimes your expertise can work against you. If you're using a lot of jargon and legislative ease, that will not connect you with voters. One quick example of that, and then I'm going to turn this over to Deb. This was a term that I heard this past election year, loan modification. Got to be honest with you, have no idea what that meant. Now, this is a little bit better phrasing. Rather than loan modification, if you say slowing the rate of home foreclosures, at least people know what you're talking about. But in terms of really building a true connection with voters, this is the language that we're after. Yeah. Loan modification, what does it mean? It means helping families stay in their homes. So I will leave you with that and turn this over to Deb. My last thoughts to you in terms to think about how you can improve your skills. I work with too many women candidates who tell me they never watch themselves on videotape. Big mistake, and it's an easy way to improve. When you are out at community meetings and giving speeches or you appear on local television, you should be watching those tapes of yourself because you'll identify what works and you also identify what doesn't work. Speech writing is difficult to do. I hope you will all be on the outlook for talented people who can write press releases for you, who can help you with your stump speech. Good writing is key, and then finally, practice. And the best way to practice is videotaping. I think I mentioned that earlier, but it's really, really important. Practice, put yourself on tape, and then take the time to play back and watch how you did. So thanks very much, and I look forward to your questions a little bit later on.
Thank you, Chris. Right. Deb, we'll turn it over to you.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Chris, and the team that's here. Hi, I'm Deb Sofield. I'm an executive speech and corporate presentations coach. And I'm based in South Carolina. I travel as a national speaker and trainer in America and overseas. I really appreciate the scope of this assembled team on this call. I'm a Republican, and I am based in the South, below the Mason-Dixon line. And we do things differently down here. I'll say at the outset, I think it's vitally important that you do what's best for you in your area of the country. Things change according to where we are. You know, the qualified label, as research has pointed out, is needed. I'm not going to argue with the research, but where I coach and train, you're going to need to add in and use other words to back up the word qualified. Because what we don't want is a question loaded into the mind of the voters of, why do you need to tell me you're qualified? Fact is, women do have a harder time, and we can overcome it with the words that you use and the presentation that you give in your performance. So I want to be very careful that when we deal with the voters, that you really keep in the minds of the voters your ability. Very important that you learn to stand firm. So in addition to using the word qualified in print and in the voice of others who recommend you and your skills and ability, let me talk for a little bit about your verbal public persona and other words that I think ring true as you build your powerful presence. Now, since we do things a little differently down here and since I primarily coach in the southern states, I'm going to speak from my perspective in working with women candidates. You can always call my friend Chris if you're above the Mason-Dixon. She'd be happy to help you there, too. In the South, we do something called a double talk down here. I'm sure other places do it, too, but I think we've perfected it here in the South. You'll rarely hear a Southern lady use words to describe her campaign like you might in other places. An example would be the word fight. We don't fight down here. That would mess up our pearls. What would also be unladylike for us. So we use the word work. That's more dignified. I'll work for you, not I'll go to Washington and fight for you. I've been elected to office for 14 years now, and I rarely use the word fight in my campaign literature because it doesn't resonate with my voters, male and female. It does in other places. We also do something here that I'm sure other places do, but I think we do it well. We say one thing and slide in our second line, which is usually the knife that kills, and it's the phrase that we use quite often, well, bless his heart, which sounds nice in reality, but it means you're dumb as a rock. We also like to throw in phrases such as, he's seen better days, and if he had an idea, it would die of loneliness. And of course, we say all this with a smile, and then we quickly move on to another topic. I do know we've perfected the art of speaking and sliding in that second line as we smile through it all. Now, I know it may sound a little silly to talk about, but when done correctly, they will never see it coming, and it is the punch that will knock you out. One of the pros of this is, of course, Governor Ann Richards, always with a smile and that terrific hair. In the southern states, we're also rather sensitive about religion and our faith community, and church life is a part of our weekly activity. So faith language shows up in our campaign speeches. I'm sought out by many because I understand the faith language that many in the South are drawn to when one is speaking and campaigning here in the southern states. And I do believe nationwide the faith language in this time where we are is still a very valid part of campaign vocabulary. As a southern woman, by having a second and third party sing your praise will help bolster your credibility and street cred. And you've heard that from our other presenters today. It also helps to have a gatekeeper to open doors for you to raise money, make connections, and smooth over feelings when your campaign rhetoric might get a little excited. I think Chris and the others have pointed out a key for women everywhere is a concept in the word likability. What I see more and more as successful is a perceived familiarity with candidates, and we show that by using, for a female candidate, her first name on a bumper sticker or a sign, such as, I'm for Rita, we're for Deb, Patty, yes, versus Smith for Senate, Jones for House, Wilson for Sheriff. An action language would be her first name to build a link and perceive connection, making her feel like a part of your family. We've also focused on the word confidence. Confidence is another must for females, and it shows up in the word I and not we. It's more than a word, it's also an attitude. And the fact is, as a strong woman, it's okay to say, I did A, B, and C. I can certainly do X, Y, and Z. See, by the power of the word I, you are not going to give your credibility away. Now, occasionally you do need to say we, as in by working together, we accomplished what couldn't be done. But be careful about that. This is your race, and you need to take credit. The voters need to know that you can do what you say you can do. So there's quite a few other things as we look for as we're putting you into a position of power. It's important that they know that you individually can stand and deliver even if you stand alone.